Why'd you give up that shield?
Why are you making such a big deal out of something that has nothing to do with you?
Steve believed in you. He trusted you. He gave you that shield for a reason. That shield, that is everything he stood for. That is his legacy. He gave you that shield and you threw it away like it was nothing. So maybe he was wrong about you. And if he was wrong about you, then he was wrong about me.
You finished?
Yeah.
All right, good. Maybe this is something you or Steve will never understand. But can you accept that I did what I thought was right?
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney Plus. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU Diaries. I'm your host, Blake Larson, and I am so happy to be back. We're talking episode 102 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Star Spangled Man. And this was another welcome step forward for this show. I think it's finding its footing, especially after the remarkable and exceptional start of WandaVision. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has to find its own identity, and it is doing so, especially between the banter that is shared between Sam and Bucky. It is comedy gold, and the chemistry is incredible. So I'm very happy to talk about this episode and dive deep into the theme and the character and what they're trying to accomplish here in what feels like a much larger story than just a six-hour extravaganza, if you will, of a television show. Rather, it feels like a six-hour movie that's just split into six separate parts. But we'll get there in a little bit. Before we do, though, I want to remind you that you can go to maryandblake.com to check out all the great podcasts that we have going on over there. My wife and I, my partner, who appeared on this podcast for the season one wrap-up of WandaVision. If you get a chance, go back and listen. It was a great episode. She and I do a bunch of podcasts, including Outlander Cast, which is about the show Outlander, This Is Us 2, which naturally is about This Is Us, and a whole other slew of stuff that's happening over there, including, actually, The Handmaid's Diaries. Yes, so somewhat of a counterpart to the MCU Diaries, and I cover all of The Handmaid's Tale, which is premiering. The fourth season is premiering April 28th, so later on in April, you'll be getting some more coverage from me there at maryandblake.com. And of course, don't forget about the Mary and Blake Facebook group. It's an exclusive group just for all the Mary and Blake nerds who want to talk about whatever they want to talk about. If it is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, great. If it's The Handmaid's Tale, even better. Whatever it is you want to talk about and nerd out, that's the place to be. But for now, let's get into the show, shall we? Yes, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, episode 102, Star Spangled Man, finally brings our characters together. And most importantly, I think it asks what it means to actually be Captain America. First, though, let's just get it out there right now, right off the jump. John Walker, a.k.a. Captain America 2.0, he sucks. You know, I'm sure he's a nice guy. And maybe he doesn't suck the way that I think he says he sucks, but he's just not likable. And most importantly, he's not Steve Rogers. I'm not too invested in Captain America 2.0, though. Because let's be honest. Wyatt Russell, who plays Captain America 2.0, he is not going to be your Captain America going forward. Just not going to happen. It's not to say that he's a bad actor or he doesn't deserve a role in the MCU. He's just not Captain America. Cap is a character who is probably the most well-known and bankable presence in the MCU this side of Iron Man. Marvel Studios is not going to move forward with Kurt Russell's kid. Yes, he's Kurt Russell's kid in that position. You know it. I know it. Marvel Studios knows it. Hell, I bet even Wyatt Russell knows it. The character, John Walker, is just a means to an end. What is that end? Well, we don't know quite yet. But he is a transitional character, someone who's a stepping stone. And as much as we know it, the writers know it too. So I think they have purposely written Walker in a way that is somewhat amenable. Like, he's not a bad guy. He's just not engaging. he's a jag. And for those of you nerds that don't know that term, that acronym, it's just another guy. That's all he is. He's just another guy. He's a jag. He's not engaging the way that the MCU needs a new Captain America to be portrayed. Yeah, he may have the jawline, and Walker may have the perfectly coiffed, blondish hair, blue eyes, and certainly a chiseled physique. But there's just something about him. It's just something about him that is off. What is it exactly? I don't know. Maybe it's because he was initially so nice, or maybe how he is so adherent to government control, or how he flashed the police lights at Bucky and Sam in the most annoying way possible, or how he delivered the ominous "stay out of my way" line. I can't exactly put my finger on it. Sure, he's nice on the outside, but you can tell he is smarmy as hell and extraordinarily insecure on the inside. Ultimately, Walker is that annoying, overachieving class pet. You know who I'm talking about. Every class had one. I could think of the one that I had. I know you're thinking of the person that you had in high school that was the annoying, overachieving class pet. They always did the right thing. They always had a 4.0 GPA, and they always won the award for never missing a day of school. But the worst part about it was they wanted you to know it. And Walker is that kind of guy, and he wants you to know it. I mean, bless his heart, though. Walker wants to be liked. And honestly, he does try to make a good effort with Bucky and Sam. He even admits in the most sincere way, really, honestly, I could possibly imagine, that he doesn't want to be Steve Rogers, but rather he just wants to be the best Captain America he can be. And while it's a virtuous sentiment, which feels like it's loaded with all of the right intent, there's an inherent gaping fault line with its very premise. Despite his protests to the contrary, the mantle of Captain America was handed to Walker by a committee of people who wanted to press the easy button after the world collapsed. And that is the major problem. Captain America, in quotes, simply cannot be bestowed by a committee. Never mind a bunch of politicians who felt it was necessary to select the next Cap from a group of or a bunch of other overachieving nerds just like Walker, as if it was the NFL draft. The mantle of Captain America is earned through achievement, but also vigor and conviction in the right avenues. In his press conference at the beginning of the last episode, Sam Wilson posits that the symbols of Captain America are nothing without the man behind them. While he's not necessarily wrong, he certainly isn't right either. As I noted in the breakdown of the first episode, Captain America, to me, is not just a man, but an ideal. Recently, a couple of days ago, I had the pleasure of rewatching Captain America: Civil War. And afterward, while watching this episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I kept hearing echoes of the funeral scene in Civil War in my head.
I asked her once how she managed to master diplomacy and espionage in a time when no one wanted to see a woman succeed at either. And she said, compromise where you can. But where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right. Even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no. You move.
Compromise where you can. Where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right. Even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye, and say, no, you move. In the MCU, this quote comes from Peggy Carter, who we all know was Captain America's love of, you know, his life. And this story is being told by her niece, Sharon Carter, at Peggy's funeral. Sharon Carter, of course, ends up becoming Agent 13. But you comic book nerds, however, you'll recognize this quote from its originator in the comics. Steve Rogers. He actually says it to Spider-Man in the Civil War arc. It's neither here nor there. But Steve Rogers was actually the one who said this quote to begin with in the comics. And it was adapted for the MCU. It goes to show you, though, that Captain America is not a shield, a motorcycle, a cute costume, or really even a person. Those words are Captain America. Do what is right and remain steadfast in that decision, no matter who is telling you you're wrong. Steve embodied this mantra from start to finish, whether it was fighting bullies in Brooklyn, jumping on a grenade and training. By the way, notice how Bucky brings this up to John Walker when he asks for a legitimate reason he should be considered Captain America. Or whether it was fighting Tony or even reconciling with Tony. But most of all, standing up to the American government when it was called for, as was the case in that movie, Captain America: Civil War. This right here is the fundamental flaw in John Walker's existence as Cap. He cannot stand up to the American government because the government is the reason he is Captain America 2.0. Walker takes orders, benefits from all the considerable resources because he takes those orders, and does what he is told because that's what best suits the American government. End of story. Yes, I know that there are some of you that are out there that will say that Steve was given his abilities by the American government, which is true. But Steve was not shaped by the American government. Everything about John Walker, whether it's being interviewed on Good Morning America, which, by the way, happens to take place at night, so I would imagine it's probably pre-taped, or if it was going back to his high school and having a giant pep band playing, signing autographs, even right down to his newly designed outfit and insignia for Captain America, it all feels like the sum of answers focus grouped to death. Having trouble with alliances? Focus group. Want to make people feel better? Focus group. Need a new symbol of hope in America of old? Focus fracking group. Oh, it drives me crazy. It's like when Dunkin' Donuts rolls out a brand new product. They buy commercial space on radio or TV. They produce all the posters for advertisements and slogans. By the way, notice all the posters splattered everywhere stating Cap is back. Or the ones at the police station saying reset. Oh. And when they do all of this, they engage in a corporate rollout that has been tested and retested and tested again for good measure. This is a corporate rollout to defeat all corporate rollouts that have ever been attempted. What's worse is the government is doing something in this version of the MCU that I cannot stand. Instead of showing you why this person is worthy of the job, they keep telling you that he's worthy of the job. They keep telling you Cap is back. But how can he be Cap if he doesn't fulfill the base requirement of actually being Captain America? John Walker, Sam's decision to let go of the shield, and even Bucky's need to feel validated in this episode, they all perfectly illustrate the overall theme for this episode. What, not who, but what is Captain America? To Walker, it's a moniker or a role he leveled up to. Like if he were playing Mario and he got one of the mushrooms and he did. To Bucky, Cap is a friend and a leader, someone he followed. And it's also something he uses to validate himself and to overcome his past deeds as the Winter Soldier. For Sam, well, Cap is a complicated subject. He looks at it and he asks, is he worthy of that role? Bucky would say, yes, certainly. Captain America chose you. Steve chose you. He gave you the shield. He would affirm that notion in a heartbeat. But Sam sees only Steve as Captain America. And anyone else trying to fill those extraordinarily large size 13s, well, they're an imposter who just happens to be wearing a suit, including himself. Just because one is given super soldier powers does not mean that they are Captain America. Just ask the MCU's version of Isaiah Bradley, whose repayment for all of his hard work in the army during the Korean War was 30 years imprisonment and more tests than Dolly the Sheep. Conversely, just because someone tells you that you're Captain America, that doesn't mean that you are. John Walker is living proof of this. Again, let's not overlook the fact that the government nerds chose a white man who has blonde hair, blue eyes, and tested off the charts, in quotes, in all of the right, in quote, categories. God, it feels dirty typing it. It feels dirty saying it. And I feel dirty for even putting it on this podcast. But it's true. And more to that point, the question, if can a black man even stand as Captain America, must be racing through Sam's mind. Can he be a beacon of light for a country which has oppressed and silenced black lives and voices since its pretty much inception? How can he take the role if he isn't already treated with the level of respect any man, let alone Captain America, deserves? Christ, he can't even get an SBA loan or walk down the street having a conversation with his friend without some implicit racism. And that's why it's important to have Isaiah Bradley in this episode, the man that Bucky and Sam go visit at his house. Isaiah serves as a mirror and a warning for Sam.
You think you can wake up one day and decide who you want to be? It doesn't work like that. Well, maybe it does for folks like you.
Isaiah, the reason we're here is because there's more of you and me out there.
You and me.
And we need to know how.
I'm not going to talk about it anymore. You know what they did to me for being a hero? They put my ass in jail. For 30 years, people running tests, taking my blood, coming into my cell. Even your people weren't done with me.
Isaiah,
get out of my house!
Let's go, man. Let's go.
This was an incredible performance. But this is also what you become when you're a black man. Do your duty, give everything over to the people you serve, and fight for your government's best interests. You end up like this. You end up stuck in a rundown house, denying your existence, waiting for the next shoe to drop while missing a lifetime of love, respect, and the rightful honor that you deserve. Sure, you fight for your government's best interests, while they have no intention to serve yours. And yes, for those keeping track at home, this show is absolutely tackling a very hard subject in racial inequality, and it is doing a remarkably effective job in doing it. Again, I ask the question, can Captain America be black? That's a hard question. I mean, I firmly believe yes. But it is not an easy answer for most of America. I'm a middle-aged white man in one of the bluest states in the Union, Rhode Island. My sentiments may not match up with my counterpart living somewhere in God knows where, in what could be one of the reddest states in the Union. Or, it could be my neighbor. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Either way, can a black man be Captain America in the United States? I don't have the answer, but it's one to think about. Let's take it a step further. On a more basic level, should there even be a second Captain America? Should there be Captain America 2.0 to begin with, regardless of his color? Was Steve right in passing down the shield to Sam? Did Steve unwittingly set Sam up for failure because it's simply just too much responsibility to stand steadfast for what's right in spite of whatever is barreling towards you? The journey we have begun in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is this. How does Sam reconcile his insecurity with the goodness Steve Rogers saw in him? And even if he can, does that reconciliation allow Sam to evolve into his version of what it means to be Captain America? And does it grant Bucky the confidence to move forward as simply Bucky? By the way, note how many times he told people they can't call him Bucky because that's what Steve called him. Watching Bucky and Sam come together in this episode is a nice move forward for the show. Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie have an incredible chemistry together as a buddy tandem, and their banter nails the absolute right tone that the MCU has established, something with which, by the way, WandaVision seemed to struggle mightily. And the action sequences continue to be right on the money and deliver memorable high-octane fuel after the slower and more methodically paced WandaVision. And while that's all well and good, it's the smaller sequences that define The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Cops break up a legitimate quarrel between Bucky and Sam and immediately ask Bucky if Sam is bothering him, only to de-escalate the situation when Bucky gives them the "do you know who this is" treatment. Sam tried to help Bucky understand that he made the choice to give up the shield because he thought it was the right choice to make. By the way, do you see the connection here? Do you see the connection that the show is making between Falcon and Captain America? Do the right thing and be steadfast in that. And of course, Bucky begs Sam in therapy to step into his inherent goodness. Bucky needs Sam to get that shield because Steve gave it to him. And if Steve cannot, and Steve cannot be proven wrong. For if Steve was wrong about Sam, then he had to be wrong about Bucky's salvation. And without Cap's validation, Bucky's life and his progress as a functional member of society are wholly invalidated. Now, that may be an oversimplification of how Bucky is feeling, and it may be an oversimplification on Bucky's part about Captain America himself, but Bucky believes it to be true. If Sam doesn't take up the shield, then Bucky is invalidated. All of these scenes are indicative of the conflicts that Malcolm Spellman, as the showrunner, is using to drive the narrative for this show. Equality, self-worth, systemic racism, and what it means to be an American in a wildly flawed American society. These are all being grappled with a deft touch in these small moments, which, of course, culminate in that impromptu therapy session in the jail cell. Like I said earlier, this scene is gold on every level, as it provides context for our heroes. It's funny, there's incredible chemistry, but more importantly, it lays out the conflict between the two of them very plainly, and it actually provides the foundation for their actions going forward. From the inherent conflicts about the perception of their respective relationships with Steve, note that Sam only knew Steve as Captain America, and Bucky knew Steve as a scrawny kid. Both of which are correct, but neither are fully Steve either. It goes from that to how they even measure themselves against Steve's looming presence. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is more about Bucky and Sam understanding their value to each other than any of the whiz-bang action that the show has so far, you know, handled well. But these small scenes are what matter most. What is not handled so perfectly, though, is the transition to Zemo. Yes, Helmet Zemo from Captain America Civil War is coming back, and I want it all. Daniel Brühl's Zemo is probably my favorite antagonist from any of the Marvel films. Yes, even including Thanos. And I'm a little biased, too, because Captain America Civil War is probably my favorite MCU film. But Zemo is a smart and passionate, extremely skilled man who recognized his strengths and used those strengths to gain revenge on the Avengers. He served as a perfect mirror to the almost godlike figures, except for Thor, who, oddly enough, is a god, but not that again, neither here nor there. Zemo embodied real-world stakes for a group of heroes who are largely immune to such vulnerabilities. This was a regular man who used his strengths to tear down the strongest members of the world. Zemo is a great character, but in this particular instance, for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the writing posits that Sam and Bucky are going to chat with Zemo about how a group of people have suddenly transformed into super soldiers without any fanfare. How did this group of people, the Flag Smashers, come to be? And the reasoning that the show is giving you that they're involving Zemo is because he knows all of the, in quotes, secrets. And if there was anybody in this world that knew about this group, it would be him. It is weak reasoning at best. But for the sake of going along to get along, I'm here for it. Because Brühl's presence is something that I have looked forward to since it was announced he was going to be reprising his role as Zemo. As it relates to the show on the whole, while it continues to fall victim to the cliffhanger-style pitfalls, you know, in this case it was Zemo. In last episode it was, there's a new Captain America! These cliffhanger-style episodes and the endings, they feel cheap and relatively unearned. But The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, as I said, took a big step forward with this episode regarding the storytelling for its main characters. We're finally diving into some real pathos between Bucky and Sam, how they continue to measure themselves against Steve Rogers, and how they both need each other to become free of that burden. It's still obviously the second part of what I would consider to be a six-hour movie, but the MCU, well, I can't fault it. Because the MCU has long blurred the lines between what is a television show and what is a movie. Can we judge these episodes on an episode-to-episode basis? Normally, I would say yes. But then again, is this a TV show? Or is it a six-hour movie that's just split up? Either way, I'm here for all the Sam and Bucky banter. Yes, I am. It is the best. I cannot get enough for it. It is easily the best facet on this show. But what's most important is we discover and we define what is Captain America. Apropos of nothing for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, episode 102, Star Spangled Man. First, I mentioned earlier that there is zero chance Wyatt Russell remains Captain America in the MCU after this series. I really do believe that. Of course, in the comics, he becomes another person called U.S. Agent. It was after he gave up the Captain America mantle. So is there room for Wyatt Russell in the MCU? Sure, he could be U.S. Agent. But there's no way he's sticking around to be Captain America. And that does leave a giant Captain America-sized hole in the MCU lineup. Perhaps Kevin Feige fills that hole with some of the new characters he's gained from the Disney's purchase of the Fox Studios. I'm thinking that star-studded alignment of X-Men and all the other characters, perhaps even Deadpool. Not to say that they would become Captain America, but their presence will fill that hole. Or perhaps Feige does nothing and just leaves Captain America on the sidelines. That's an answer too. But if Feige does revive the Captain America character, not necessarily Steve Rogers, but if he does bring back another Captain America, in my opinion, it either has to be played by Sebastian Stan or Anthony Mackie. And of course, there is precedent in the comics for this, as both Falcon and the Winter Soldier became Captain America for short periods of time. It would be natural to expect Falcon to assume the Captain America role, especially given the study in racial inequality that the Falcon in the Winter Soldier seems to be taking on. But it would also be a fun bit of subversion in having the Captain America title be given to Bucky, who was once the Winter Soldier. If that happens, it would be a fun bit of subversion, because the result here is that both would have purpose. Falcon would remain steadfast in what he believed to be right. Bucky would find validation from himself as Captain America. They would have purpose, and it would validate the agency of both of the characters. Plus, it would be a terrific way to honor Steve Rogers and the ideals that make up Captain America. Recognize the song that was being played by the Pep Band? You should. It's an updated version of the Captain America's theme by Alan Silvestri. Go back, take a listen. It's really cool. Are we 100% sure that the Flag Smashers are the bad guys here? I mean, it seems like they stole something from Power Broker, and he wants it back badly. They did something bad. Additionally, we have some followers of the Flag Smashers calling them the modern-day Robin Hoods. And it doesn't seem like they want anarchy so much as they are trying to serve equality, which is a very interesting route to take, especially given the racial inequality tones or undertones of this episode. After getting an emotional goodbye from some random log carrier who helped stop the Power Broker's men, there seems to be a real momentum of likability for this group and their leader, Carly Morgenthau. Oh yes, Carly Morgenthau, who is a play on the comic book version of Carl Morgenthau. Carl Morgenthau was an extremist who believed that nationality was the downfall of society. Thus, you have this female counterpart saying, one world, one people. No countries, just one people. Carl Morgenthau eventually ends up becoming what we call, or the comic books called, the Flag Smasher. So you can see how this group gets their name and from where they are deriving this theme. Here's a fun thing, though. Oddly enough, Carl Morgenthau and John Walker in the comics were actually briefly allies at one point, and that's all I'm going to say. Just keep that in mind. By the way, do you recognize Carly from somewhere else? You should. She's played by Erin Kellyman, who starred in Solo, a Star Wars story, as Enfys Nest, a character who was originally thought to be a villain in that movie, but ended up being a freedom fighter for her people instead. Another thing to keep in mind. Morgenthau seems to have stolen something big from the Power Broker, and the Power Broker seems to want it back badly. Yes, as we suspected last week, Power Broker is in fact involved in this giant web. In the comics, Power Broker is a bad news dude. He's actually played by, there are two characters that play Power Broker, but the main one is a bad news dude who is responsible for a lot of other bad news dudes becoming very powerful. Oh, this is not a good look. I mean, this is not, this does not bode well for John Walker and all the other characters in this show so far. Isaiah Bradley's story in both the comics and the MCU is heartbreaking. It is awful. And he does a lot of work for the American government, at least in the comic book version, against the Nazis. In the MCU version, it's for the Korean War. And he's generally known as the Black Captain America in the comics. It is heartbreaking what happens to him, because in the comics, he too is also jailed for many, many years and tested for many, many years. But his grandson, Eli, the one who answers the door when they knock on it, he does play a role in the comics too. And after seeing Billy and Tommy in WandaVision and featuring Hawkeye's daughter in Endgame, and who will be featured in the Hawkeye television show, now we have Eli. Do I dare say that the MCU is building towards the young Avengers? Another group of people that formed up an Avengers group? Well, that's food for thought. Who is Lamar Hoskins? Well, besides being the sidekick to Captain America 2.0 in the MCU, he's also known as Battlestar. Yes. Oh, that name is super lame. And it feels like it was also the product of a kabillion focus groups, or that, or he actually gave himself the nickname. Either way, it ain't good. But as bad and lame as that name is, Battlestar does play a decent little role in the comics too. Usually serving as the sidekick to John Walker, he also pops up occasionally by himself here and there, touting his super patriotic ways. In fact, he was, in the comics, a pro wrestler, and he was eventually given superhuman strength and powers by none other than Power Broker. More food for thought. Androids, aliens, and wizards, the AAA. Oh, man, a great running joke throughout this entire episode. Also, sorcerers are wizards without the hat. Also, a great line, I'll never forget it. But wait, what would make that for Harry Potter? Harry Potter's a wizard, doesn't have a hat. Either way, truly very funny stuff. And that is it for this episode, ladies and gents. Time to close it out. Yeah, that's it. That's the end of this episode. We're going to be getting another one starting on Friday. As I record this, it's Wednesday. So we'll be coming back to you. Hopefully, I'll get these episodes out a little bit sooner than what I have been. It's just wild doing this company, having a family, doing another full-time job, covering all the shows that we do, getting everything done. But I promise I will get these out sooner to you. Most of you have come back and said that you enjoyed it, so we're going to keep going. Of course, you want to keep supporting Mary and Blake Media, you can go to jointhenerdclan.com and become an official member of the hashtag NerdClan. It's the best way to help support Mary and Blake Media in this crazy time and help this independently owned company and this independently produced podcasts like this one and all the others that we produce. It is the best way to help aid that process. So go to jointhenerdclan.com and you'll get a ton of great benefits like book clubs and special episodes and bonus podcasts and free swag and just the community itself, just a community of nerds who just want to talk about all the things that they love. So that seems to be it for now, ladies and gents. Until then, I'll see you next episode.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.